Book 4. Love, Orchardly. Mr. Bullfrog, that wasn't quite his name, but close enough, was actually quite nice once you got to know him. He could turn his heat down to pleasantly warm, and he could shrink himself so that he fitted in an armchair. It turned out he'd never had tea before, but he took to it straight away, which showed he must be a fundamentally decent person. Mr. Bullfrog explained that he lived next door, vertically, not horizontally, and he'd been meaning to pop round and introduce himself for some time. When Barry asked him what he did, he replied with some sort of confused rigmarole about having been down there since the first age, which presumably meant he was retired. Pat made a point of thanking him for all the free heating and hot water, and he said, "Not a bit. Think nothing of it. And if you want it a bit hotter or cooler, just say the word." He apologized about having made such a fuss, but explained that he was always a bit cranky when he'd just woken up. It was so nice to have someone new to talk to. Barry and Pat Lushington were quite fond of each other. After nearly 30 years of marriage, they still got on remarkably well. But there hadn't been an awful lot to talk about since they'd arrived in the realms, apart from all the things that didn't work or weren't as they were supposed to be, and there wasn't really anything to do except talk to each other, sit in silence, or drink until it went away. A new friend, and it didn't take long for them to decide that Mr. Bullfrog, though a bit quaint in some respects, was definitely their sort. For a start, he was a good listener. He seemed genuinely interested when they told him about how Amy was doing so well as a freelance website designer, and there was no trace of the usual glazed look when they showed him the photos of the grandchildren, Alastair, 3, and Rachel, 18 months. His eyes glowed red with fascination as Barry told him all about the ins and outs of the phosphate game. And he asked several questions which demonstrated that, although he clearly didn't understand a word of it, he was paying close attention throughout. He was thrilled to bits when they called up Google Street View on the laptop and showed him where they used to live. And after Pat finished telling the story of how the carpet fitters had done the whole of upstairs with the wrong carpet, you literally could have heard a pin drop. "If you don't mind me saying so," he said, "I can't quite see why you left such an extraordinary, wonderful place and came here." Barry and Pat looked at each other. Then both of them started talking at the same time. Pat told him about property prices, local taxes and water rates, traffic congestion, frequency of refuse collection, Eastern European tradesmen, and gangs of feral youths letting down tires and kicking over dustbins. While Barry did his thing about quality of life, the rat race, stress levels, the good life, doing a bit of gardening, and room to actually breathe. They finished at more or less the same time, and Mr. Bullfrog looked at them both and nodded, and they just knew he understood. Then Barry tentatively asked if Mr. Bullfrog played golf, and Mr. Bullfrog frowned and said he'd never heard of it, but he'd be delighted if Barry would teach him, and it was simply perfect. "The truth is," Mr. Bullfrog said with that disarming simplicity of his, "I've been asleep down there for a very long time, and I feel I've probably been missing out on things rather. It would be so nice to have some company from time to time." Pat took that as an invitation to ask personal questions, which Mr. Bullfrog didn't seem to object to in the least. He'd been married a long time ago, but sadly Mrs. Bullfrog had passed away. Pat couldn't quite piece together what had happened to her, but it was something to do with falling off a bridge during an argument with some ghastly-sounding character who was either a policeman or a college lecturer. And talking about it was clearly upsetting the old boy, so Pat discreetly changed the subject. What he'd done before he retired remained equally vague, but Barry was fairly sure he'd been some sort of heating engineer, while Pat was convinced he must have been something in local government. Mr. Bullfrog was reticent at first on the subject of politics, but once he got going, his views turned out to be firmly and sincerely held, and pretty much in line with the Lushington's own. This fellow Mordack, for instance. Barry and Pat didn't know who Mr. Mordack was, but they picked up from context that he was some sort of prime minister. Fresh ideas and a new perspective were all very well, but change for change's sake. "If it ain't broke, don't fix it," Mr. Bullfrog always said. Here Barry nodded enthusiastically, and Pat offered him another ginger biscuit. And the old ways had worked well enough, for as long as Mr. Bullfrog could remember. And he knew it was all too easy to be hard on young people nowadays, but all this free health care and statutory sick pay and trolls' rights, it doesn't do people any good in the long run, cosseting them and wrapping them in cotton wool. It's a harsh, goblin-eat-elf world out there, and you're doing them no favours encouraging them to think otherwise. Faint alarm bells rang in Pat's mind. True, it was so refreshing to meet someone who was so obviously on their wavelength, but she knew Barry, and once he got started on politics, there was a danger of him getting overexcited, and maybe Mr. Bullfrog didn't want to hear 30 cogent reasons for bringing back the birch, for spitting out chewing gum on the pavement. She gave her husband a warning smile and changed the subject. "Did Mr. Bullfrog," she asked, "have any hobbies?" "Apparently not. In fact, the concept seemed so strange to him that he had trouble grasping it." "Things you do for fun," Pat explained. "What you do in your spare time." That didn't help. Fun and spare time were both equally alien. She tried again. "What," she asked him, "did he enjoy doing?" Mr. Bullfrog thought about that for a long time. Then he said,
"I don't understand."
Pat sighed. She'd seen it so many times before, all work and no play, and then, when they retire, the days seem so long and empty. It was, if the truth be told, one of the main reasons she'd agreed to move to the realms. She knew, of course, that there was no cure for the syndrome, and the only way to save a reformed workaholic was to rekindle the addiction. Work. Not necessarily his old job back, but work of some kind. Otherwise he'd just fade away into a sad old man in a chair, like her Uncle Neville when he retired from the tax office. It was a bit of a problem to wrench the conversation round to the direction she wanted it to follow, but Pat had never prized continuity very highly, and soon she was reeling off anecdotes about sundry relatives and acquaintances who'd retired too early, been bored stiff, and then found something useful to do. Barry kept giving her odd looks, but he could be a bit slow sometimes. She ignored him and pressed on, and was pleased to note that Mr. Bullfrog was listening with rapt attention.
"It's interesting that you should say that," Mr. Bullfrog said. "Take me, for instance. All I've really done since I was cast down into the chasms is sleep."
Barry raised both eyebrows. But Pat assumed that "cast down into chasms" was the local way of saying "getting the sack," or "compulsory early retirement." And the thought of a lively, intelligent old buffer like Mr. Bullfrog spending his days asleep because he had nothing to do made her heart bleed. That was no good, she assured him briskly. Obviously, they'd only just met, but she could tell he still had ever so much to offer. Plenty of time to sit around when you're old and decrepit, but someone in his prime, like Mr. Bullfrog, ought to be out there, doing things, contributing, setting the world to rights. Like her cousin Norman, who'd retired after 40 years in spin dryers, and immediately got elected to the parish council. She stopped. Mr. Bullfrog was gazing at her, his eyes gleaming. "That's more like it," she thought.
"The council," Mr. Bullfrog said. "I remember now. I sat in the Black Council before the realms were sundered, and Thringafleon was cast down, and the Nameless One driven forth beyond the portals."
He sighed, and the brief flare seemed to die away.
"Happy days," he said. "Of course, back then we'd never heard of all this touchy-feely, end-hugging rubbish."
"There, you see," Pat said happily. "Nothing like taking an interest in civic affairs to put the spring back in your step. You know what? You should think about standing again."
Mr. Bullfrog frowned.
"Standing?"
"For the council. When Norman looked into it, they told him they were crying out for new members. Apathy, you see. People just can't be bothered, can they?"
"Resume my place on the council?"
Mr. Bullfrog seemed to swell. Maybe it wasn't such a bad name for him after all. And Pat could have sworn she heard the arms of the chair creak.
"Take back that which was lost. Restore the old values," he blinked. "Oh, I don't know," he said. "I'm not sure I've got the energy for all that anymore."
"Well, it's got to be better than sleeping all day," Pat said. "You'll be surprised. I mean, it gave Norman a whole new lease of life. He's on 3 committees, and sometimes Janice doesn't see him from one day's end to the next. He's up in that attic, photocopying. He reckons he can't understand how he ever had time to go to work. Anyway," she added in her special wheedling tone, "I think people with your talents and experience have a duty."
"Duty,"
Mr. Bullfrog repeated, and Pat knew she'd scored a direct hit there.
"Yes, I suppose you're right. Duty has to come first, hasn't it?"
"Result," Pat thought smugly. She beamed across at Barry, who'd switched off as he usually did when she started talking about her family, and was fiddling with his watch strap.
"Well,
that's settled then," she said.
"Would you like another cup of—" But Mr. Bullfrog wasn't listening. Mr. Bullfrog was growing. There was a snap like a rifle shot as the chair gave way around him. Then he stood up, and his knees were level with Pat's eyebrows. And he was still shooting up like Jack's beanstalk, arms raised above his head, wings spread. He rose like a gas jet that's just been turned from simmer to full. Now his head was halfway up the stairs. He was flowing. No other word for it. No normal spine could twist at that angle. He didn't seem to have a single bone in his body. Pat felt her eyebrows fizz in the glaring heat. She raised her hand to cover her face, and then he was gone. Suddenly, just not there anymore. And nothing to show he'd ever been there, apart from scorch marks on the furniture. Pat stared at the ruined carpet and the wrecked chair. "Well," she said.